Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. We knew it was going to be different the second time around than it was. In fact, a new tone was set right at the start when the president came out on stage wearing a black ninja outfit with an American flag pin. We'll ask who decided to fight, plus House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi joins us to answer silly questions about what it is like to wear the pantsuit in the House of Representatives. All that, plus Carl Castle talks about his school day.
This guy rode his bike and did a ton of drugs. Well, so did I in high school.
We'll ask who got high before he went fast, coming up on our show right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Former South Dakota Senator George McGovern is dead. In 1972, McGovern lost the presidential race to Richard Nixon in a landslide. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Charles Michael Ray reports.
In the 1972 presidential race, McGovern was embraced by the left as the anti-Vietnam, anti-establishment candidate. McGovern later described the 1972 loss to Richard Nixon as one of the most disheartening points in his life.
I thought the program I spelled out there was the truth. I thought it was the best for America, and I'll go to my grave believing America would be better off had I been elected.
Nixon later left office in disgrace of the Watergate scandal, and McGovern went on to become the first United Nations global ambassador on hunger. He won the World Food Prize alongside Bob Dole in 2008 for his effort to create a global school lunch program. For NPR News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The presidential candidates are preparing for tomorrow night's third and final debate on foreign policy. Their supporters appeared on today's Sunday talk shows. Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio discussed a New York Times report that the White House is prepared to meet Iran over its nuclear program. The White House says the report is inaccurate. Speaking to NBC's Meet the Press, Rubio also downplayed the news.
The White House has denied it, and so I don't think there's much more to talk about. They've denied that. Let me say this, though. Obviously, war is always the last option. No one wants a war. We would hope this could get solved in another way. I think the military option has to be on the table, and both candidates have said that.
Obama campaign advisor David Axelrod says while no meetings are planned between the White House and Iran, this reveals that President Obama's push for Iranian sanctions is working.
They're feeling the heat, and that's what the sanctions were meant to do. So it's not, if they're sensible, they're looking at that and saying it's time to set aside our nuclear ambitions and save our economy.
The funeral for Lebanon's General Wissam al-Hassan, that country's slain intelligence chief, briefly turned into a violent protest today in Beirut. NPR's Kelly McEvers reports from Beirut. The protesters were calling on the government to resign.
Hundreds of angry young men stormed the Grand Sarai, the office of the prime minister here in Beirut. They carried sticks and chains and demanded the resignation of a government they say could have prevented the intelligence chief's killing. Wissam al-Hassan was killed by a bomb planted in a car on Friday. At least three, perhaps as many as seven others died in the blast, and dozens were wounded. Thousands turned out in central Beirut for a funeral for Hassan. Religious and political leaders stirred up the crowds with angry words, accusing the Syrian regime and its allies here in Lebanon of the killing. As the funeral ended, young men stormed the Sarai. The Lebanese army quickly formed a cordon around the building, and the situation calmed down. Kelly McEvers, NPR News, Beirut.
And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. The spokesman for former Libyan strongman Muammar Gaddafi denies that he was captured yesterday. His statement is posted on an internet recording. NPR's Leila Fadel reports it is impossible to know if the recording is actually the former spokesman, Musa Ibrahim.
Libyan authorities claimed they'd captured the elusive spokesman of the late Gaddafi. The man's whereabouts have been unknown since the fall of Tripoli last year, but a man said to be Musa Ibrahim spoke defiantly in a recording posted online and said, "It is a lie." He said he was not captured, he is not in Libya, and Libyan authorities were making the claims to distract from what he called massacres in the town of Beni Walid. Deadly battles have ensued there, a place still seen as a stronghold of Gaddafi loyalists. The man believed to be Ibrahim also denied that Khamis Gaddafi, Gaddafi's son, was found dead in Beni Walid. Ibrahim also said Libya is now in the darkest of days, and the slain dictator he once spoke for was the man who united Libya and brought out the good in the nation. Leila Faldin, NPR News.
Pope Benedict XVI has elevated 7 people to sainthood. He held a ceremony in St. Peter's Square, attended by thousands of people today. 2 of the new saints are American women. 1 is a nun from the 1800s who spent much of her life caring for leprosy patients in Hawaii. Another is a young Native American woman from the mid-1600s who is said to have cured others. Voters in 2 northern Spanish areas are holding regional elections. It's the first chance Spanish voters have had to express opinions on how their government is dealing with Spain's fiscal crisis. Spain's unemployment rate is 25%, and it's suffering its second recession in 3 years. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world on the web at hewlett.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you all so much. Great to see you. I'm excited, too. We have a great show for you today. We are excited to have Nancy Pelosi. She's the former Speaker of the House and the current Minority Leader on to play our games. Now, we were doing some research about Ms. Pelosi. We did it online, of course, and people have got a lot of interesting things to say about her. She's a pioneer in American politics and Satan returned to Earth in human form. So our first question will be, Ms. Pelosi, are those your real glowing eyes that we saw on the internet, or are they just contacts? First, it's your turn to answer some questions. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mike Dork from Ithaca, New York.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Ithaca is a beautiful place, home to Cornell. What do you do there?
I am a law professor at Cornell University.
Oh, really? Well, what a coincidence.
It's a company town.
It is, it is. And what do you teach in the law?
Constitutional law and related subjects.
Really?
It's always a great time to be a constitutional law professor because they're always screwing something up.
They really are. Well, welcome to our show, Mike. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and the host of The Future Files, a new series for Georgia Public Broadcasting. Ms. Faith Saley is here.
Hi, Mike.
Next, it's the host of the podcast that is taking over the world, Too Beautiful to Live, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hey, Mike.
Finally, it's the man behind Esquire's politics blog and a contributor to Grantland, Mr. Charlie Pierce is here.
What's up, Mike?
Mike, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you 3 quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just 2 of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Are you ready to go?
Ready as I can be.
All right. We'll see how ready that is. Here is your first quotation.
They brought us whole binders full of women.
Binders of them. That was one of the most talked about moments at a big event on Tuesday. What was it?
That was Governor Willard Mitt Romney explaining how he asked to see more women apply for jobs in his Massachusetts cabinet.
Yes, and he said it at what event?
Oh, at the presidential debate.
Yeah, you assumed we were actually a much more smarter, difficult show than we are.
You're more
Mike,
smarter.
A common error.
Mike's classes must be like 7 hours long.
So, yes, in presidential debate two, we learned that Mitt Romney has an organized, if troubling, way of storing women, and that President Obama managed to escape the basement where his evil, tranquilized twin had locked him away during the first debate. The president, of course, it would have been very hard for him not to beat the low expectations he set for himself in the first time around. The first question for the president in this debate was from an EMT who checked his vitals and asked him if he knew who the president was. But this time, President Obama was focused. He was feisty. He began his first answer by saying to Mitt Romney, "Hello, my name is Barack Obama. You killed my re-election chances. Prepare to die."
I will tell you, having been in the media center at the debate, that when Binders Full of Women happened, it was a Scooby-Doo moment for everybody in the building, including, like, the TV crews from China who don't speak English.
Well, what happened was, as you explained, he was asked specifically how he would help women in a Romney administration, and he talked about how when he was governor of Massachusetts, he had called for a, quote, binder full of women that he might be able to hire for his cabinet. So he became the first person in history to talk about keeping women in binders who wasn't a madam or a serial killer. By the way, in case you were wondering, binders full of women is the dirtiest thing that Mitt Romney has ever said. So there was a lot of talk about Candy Crowley at the debate. Everybody thought she did a good job. The best moment was when she called on somebody in the audience, and it turned out to be Jim Lehrer, ready finally to ask a good question. And then there was the moment where Romney had accused President Obama of not using the word terror in regard to the Benghazi attacks, and Obama said he had, and then Candy Crowley stepped in and corrected Romney right there. Boom! Done! Corrected! Fact-checked! This proved that the qualities that make a good debate moderator also make you the worst person to hang out with at a party. No, I'm sorry Harvey Dent didn't appear until the second Batman film. Well, seventh, if you count the non-Christopher Nolan films.
Don't you feel like, how well the moderator does is mostly affected by physical proximity to the candidates? Like, I feel like Martha Raddatz, in my opinion, probably did the best job so far. She was physically closest to them. They were just sitting at a little table. Jim Lehrer did sort of the worst. He was really far away from them, and Candy Crowley was kind of mid-range.
Right.
Interesting.
Could there be something to just shackling everybody? Like,
you think Bob Schieffer, for the third debate, should have his arms around both of them and go,
yeah,
guys?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just get them in like a huddle, or at the very least, get one of those like invisible fence chalk collar things, and then just every time they go over. It's a gentle reminder, Peter, that 2 minutes means 2 minutes.
All right, very good, Mike. Here is your next quote.
"Why is everyone so freaked out? This guy rode his bike and did a ton of drugs. Well, so did I in high school."
That was a tweet from someone named Mallory Ortberg talking about the big doping scandal involving whom?
That would be Lance Armstrong.
Yes, Lance Armstrong, of course. Remember, Lance Armstrong. Remember Lance Armstrong's memoir? It was titled, "It's Not About the Bike."
Hmm.
Well, he was telling the truth. We should have read on through the subtitle. It was, "It's not about the bike. It's about the 4 gallons of horse testosterone coursing through my system."
I will say that everybody is treating this like it's such a negative, but I feel like, I mean, we're hearing all this stuff about energy independence, and clearly his urine could power a small United States city.
This is also true. I love this detail that when sometimes they would go into the hotel rooms on the road and they'd take down the paintings from the walls of the hotel so they could hang their blood bags from them while they did, you know.
It's better than most of the art, by the way.
Yeah, I know. And then it would be embarrassing when somebody came into the room while they were doing this. Like, oh yeah, the decor in here is weird. I guess the hotel did it up in early vampire, I guess. Very good. Yeah, I was warned about that one, but I'm stubborn. What can I tell you?
He's also off of the performance-enhancing drugs that he's been taking.
Yeah. It's hard.
It's fairly obvious.
It's really hard to host this show straight. But I feel I owe it to my fans. All right, here is your last quote. That's what we're sure Felix Baumgartner was saying Sunday, as he did what?
He plummeted to Earth from a hot air balloon way, way high up in the sky.
How high exactly? That's your point. I'm kidding. No, you're right. Of course you are. Daredevil Felix Baumgartner jumped from a balloon almost 24 miles above the Earth on Sunday. He broke a number of records, including highest parachute jump, as well as the record for highest existential crisis. Highest expletive ever uttered. we had a radio link, we who were watching online on Earth. We couldn't hear, though, what he said when he jumped from the capsule, but it might have been, "I should have worn the brown space suit." I don't know why we're celebrating this guy. I mean, he just fell. I can do that. We should be cheering gravity. Way to go, elemental force.
I was going to say, wouldn't it have been a terrible surprise if he jumped and he realized he had, like, drifted out of the Earth's gravity and
started
going
off? That would have been bad.
He didn't plan on that, I don't think.
And even though the trip was sponsored by Red Bull, the Red Bull Stratos it was called, he couldn't actually drink any or bring any with him because the pressure would make that stuff even more deadly than it is here on Earth. It was so ironic. The same week that the space shuttle was finally mothballed, a soft drink company achieves this huge milestone in space exploration. I mean, maybe we should privatize everything the government does.
I'm looking forward to staying at the Doritos moon base.
I know. Carl, how did Mike do in our quiz?
Congratulations, Mike. You had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done, Mike. Congratulations. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Please help me, I'm falling in love with you. Close the door to temptation. Don't let me walk through.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information on our just-announced show in Los Angeles at the Nokia Theater on December 6th, go to WBEZ.org. You can also find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, Alex Rodriguez, the most highly paid player in baseball, was benched for some of the games of the Yankees' doomed postseason series against the Tigers because he's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But in one game, A-Rod managed to make good use of his time on the bench. What did he do?
He had a ball boy throw a baseball into the stands, and on the baseball he had written a note asking a leggy chick for her phone number.
That's exactly right. If you were making $30 million a year to sit in the dugout, you might reconsider your choices in life. But A-Rod, he's a Hall of Famer. If you couldn't score one way, well... So he spotted this attractive young woman in the stand. He sent her and a friend some signed baseballs and got their phone numbers in return. He figured it was the only way he'd get to first base this week.
Hell!
Sadly, they were right-handed, so he struck out with them, too.
Talking baseball. Luzuski, Campanella, talking baseball.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, with local reviews of roofers, doctors, auto shops, and yard care. More at angieslist.com. CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles and 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX at Tomorrow Moves. And the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. We'll be right back.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Faith Saley, Luke Burbank, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. We've arrived at the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Michelle.
Where are you calling from, Michelle?
Franklin, Massachusetts.
Franklin, Massachusetts. That's sort of out in the suburbs of Boston, right?
That's right.
What do you do there?
I'm a musician and a music teacher.
Oh, I see. That's cool. That's a great thing to do. I always think of music teachers as basically being the real-life version of Hogwarts. Because no, I'm serious, because you're giving our kids magical powers, if only they study.
Oh, I wish you hired us.
What'd you say?
I wish you could hire us.
Michelle, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Michelle's topic?
I've got your job right here.
When it comes to the economy and job creation, beggars can't be choosers, which is why we are celebrating the achievement of one job creator this week. He's rebuilding the economy one employee at a time. Guess the real innovative job creation story, and you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
Workers at Greensleeves Technologies in Delavan, Wisconsin, were tense. The pressure of deadline and competitions from abroad were bringing down morale and affecting productivity. So managers at the large software firm made a bold move. They hired a team of people to be trained in bird calls, duck quacking, goose honking, and other sounds of nature, including the babbling of brooks and the whispering of the wind through the trees. Our company has examined various psychological studies on the matter very carefully, and we have learned that people invariably relax when they are prompted by cues from the outdoors and particularly from the forest, said Edward Weishoppel, president of Greensleeves. So we have tried to create as realistic a woodland environment as we can. We even lowered the lights a bit at the end of the afternoon, and we changed the calls from birds that call during the day to those at night. Greensleeves has depended vitally on the outdoor sports community in and around Delavan. I thought they were kidding at first, said Fred Coppersmith, a veteran local hunter and bait shop owner, who now works 15 hours a week doing various duck calls over the company's PA system. I started doing the calls when I was a kid, just to show off and get girls. I used the calls for hunting, but I never thought there was a living in it, he said. Greensleeves employees particularly enjoy Coppersmith's wood duck and his hooded merganser. I just got to remember not to shoot them when they look up, Coppersmith said.
Guys who do bird calls and other nature sounds, helping to soothe the workers at a software company in Wisconsin. Your next story of a job opening up quite unexpectedly comes from Faith Saley.
Ever sit down to get some work done and you decide to make a quick check of Facebook and then you find yourself arguing on Facebook with someone from middle school about whether James Spader reached peak hotness in Pretty in Pink or Sex Lies in Videotape, only to look up and find you've wasted hours and you want to slap yourself? Why not hire someone to do it for you? That's what San Francisco blogger Manish Sethi did. Sethi summoned the self-control to install an app that tracked his productivity and found that thanks to Facebook and watching episodes of The League, he was only 38% productive. So he advertised on Craigslist, of course, under domestic gigs, asking for someone to, quote, slap me if I get off task. In this economy, apparently, you can find a lot of people willing to smack you for $8 an hour. Sethi says his inbox blew up with 20 candidates within minutes. A comely lass named Kara now sits beside him at a Mission coffee shop where she consensually swats him across the Facebook. Kara won't go so far as to call herself an attention dominatrix, but does find her new métier a bit 50 shades of, hey, focus.
A blogger ends his procrastination by hiring someone to slap him when he gets off task. Your last story of someone posting a now hiring sign comes from Luke Burbank.
Fantasy football used to be reserved for the geekiest, most stat-obsessed, most dating-challenged of NFL fans. But these days, walk into any sports bar on a Sunday and you'll see more laptops than plates of hot wings. Because apparently, we all want in on this thrilling, thrilling pretend action. This trend didn't go unnoticed by Cotter Donnell, owner of CI Shenanigans Sports Bar in Cleveland. He's joined the ranks of the job creators by hiring a staff of in-house fantasy football coaches who prowl the sidelines of the bar on Sundays, clipboards in hand, coaching people on how to play fantasy football.
You're starting Carson Palmer against the Ravens defense? Hollered Jim Depew, one of the coaches. Are you out of your damned mind? Martin Lammert, a 32-year-old software developer, was the object of Depew's rage/coaching. I was kind of intimidated at first, said Lammert, but he really did know what he was talking about. Plus, it helped me beat Brad in IT, so I can finally show up at work on Monday with my head held high. Donnell says he currently has 4 coaches on staff with plans to expand to 8 coaches next season to cover Monday and Thursday night games. He says he's received hundreds of applications for the coaching positions, but he clarifies that, despite the rumors, there is no evidence that one of the applications was submitted by that replacement referee, the guy who blew the call in the recent Seattle versus Green Bay game.
All right, here then are your choices. One of these is a real job that was recently filled. Was it from Charlie Pierce, the job of nature noise maker at a software company in Wisconsin? From Faith Saley, focus puller, if you will, someone to slap a blogger when he gets distracted? Or from Luke Burbank, the story of fantasy football coaches hired by a sports bar? Which of these is the real story of a new kind of job?
Oh, boy. One of them's true, huh?
Yes, indeed.
I think I'm going to go with A, the nature call.
All right, your choice then is Charlie's story. Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to the actual job creator.
The worry that I would be not just hit by her, but also seen being hit by everybody in the cafe was pretty much enough to make me not even think about going to Facebook.
That was Manish Sethi. He's from hackthesystem.com. He was talking about the young woman he hired to sit next to him and slap him every time he clicked on Facebook and lost focus on his work.
Oh, that's pretty sad.
That's pretty sad. So as you heard, it was Faith who had the real story, so I'm afraid you didn't win, but you did earn a point for Charlie. Michelle, thank you so much for playing.
Oh, thank you. I had a great time.
Thank you, Michelle. Bye-bye.
I want a full-time job, making love to you. I'll do anything you want me to. But if you have no plan to use a full-time man, a part-time job will do.
And now the game where we ask very important people about very unimportant things. In January 2007, Representative Nancy Pelosi of California was sworn in as the Speaker of the House, the first woman to hold that position in the history of our nation. She is currently the House Minority Leader. We are delighted to have her with us. Nancy Pelosi, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Peter. Hi, everyone.
We met once, but I don't expect you to remember it because I was panhandling. But let's not get bogged down.
Let's clarify something right off the bat. How are we to address you? What is the protocol? Is it Speaker Pelosi in honor of your former position, Leader Pelosi in honor of your current one?
Because we're all such good friends here, and just say Nancy.
Just say Nancy. Nancy. It sounds good, though. Nancy. So we're... We're delighted to have you with us. We found out, it should be obvious, given your success in politics, that you grew up in a very political family. You were raised in the business.
Right.
Your father was the mayor of Baltimore?
Yes, he was.
Right. And so what was it like growing up in a political household?
Well, it was like a forever campaign all the time. There was never a time when we weren't walking precincts or receiving volunteers at the door to pick up their brochures, their buttons, their bumper stickers, their placards, that would be called lawn signs these days.
Yeah.
And I learned how to count votes.
Did you really? So like other kids were like counting blocks, you were like going, one vote? Two votes? When you were a baby, were you kissing babies? We were reading about your father's career and your involvement with him, and we read that one of the jobs that you had working with your father was that you kept his favor file. Is that correct?
No, I didn't keep it, but I worked on it.
What is it, exactly?
What it is if somebody, for example, if somebody came to the door and said they needed help in some way, if they needed help finding a job or something like that, the idea was of a favor file was then when that person was on his or her feet, then they would extend a helping hand to somebody else. In other words, they passed it on.
Really?
And so when would you go to look for help for somebody else is someone that you had helped already.
Right. Or if you needed to have someone
again,
killed,
it was a very,
to call upon this person.
Do I detect an ethnic slur there?
No, no. I wasn't at all thinking about that scene from The Godfather. I really wasn't.
Leader Pelosi, we have no idea. We have no idea who this guy is. I didn't.
So you eventually you got married, you moved with your husband to San Francisco, and you got involved with politics there. You ran for office yourself. You know, when you went into politics, you did it with a splash, and of course you rose to the ranks of the Democratic Party in the House, and you became the Speaker of the House. You're our first Speaker of the House we've ever had on the show. We have a lot of questions about that. Primarily, what is it like to sit behind the President during the State of the Union address? Is it hard to maintain a straight face?
Well, I'm glad you're getting down to the truly important.
Yes, it will. No, really, I mean, it must, because you know, like, the nation is looking at the president. You are looming there over his shoulder. You could wreak havoc with the address if you wanted to by making faces. I mean, do you have to think about, like...
Well, one could.
Yes?
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
The Speaker of the House has awesome power. And so, when the joint session is called and the President of the United States is welcomed in a joint session, House and Senate, it is the Speaker of the House who introduces the President. And not that that's the power part, but it's a manifestation.
That is power. You could keep him waiting.
You could
be standing. He could be waiting outside, and you could be like, "So, guys, what's up? See the game last night?"
But you would want to be respectful, now, wouldn't you? I mean, under other circumstances, you would want to be
with him. Yeah. I want to ask a little bit about the job. Do you ever talk to the current speaker, John Boehner? Does he ever call you up and go, "I don't know how I'm going to get this done. These guys are being so obstreperous. What do I do, Nancy?" Does that ever happen?
No.
He doesn't invite you over back to your old office just for a get-together, have a good cry, you and him, and talk about... Talk about problems.
No,
no, really, I mean...
Girls don't cry.
No.
Don't cry.
Well done.
Nancy, if... I can't believe I just called you that. Thank you.
Thank you, Faith. I'll call you Faith. You call me Nancy.
That's a deal. I earnestly want to ask you about an issue that's dear to my heart, and I understand it's dear to yours, which is chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
So this we've read this, too, that this is your great vice. If you will, as you're big into chocolate.
I don't consider it a vice. I consider it
a blessing from
dark.
God.
You consider it
dark, very dark chocolate.
Very dark.
Very
so
dark
tell us
chocolate.
What tell us what you can. Tell us what you're willing to admit of your chocolate consumption.
Let's get down to brass tacks. How many pounds of chocolate have you eaten today? I'll take that as 20.
Well, Nancy. Madam Speaker, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
I'm a Hero to My Sex.
You made history as the first female Speaker of the House of Representatives, but we felt that women have been hogging the spotlight for too long. So we wanted to highlight some masculine pioneers, answer three questions about men who dared to go where no man had gone before, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail system. Carl, who is Speaker Pelosi playing for?
Nancy is playing for Tom and Libby Dixell of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
All right. Are you ready to play?
Okay.
All right. Here's your first question. One organization has been the target of repeated legal action by men who want the right to do what? A, be surrogate mothers. B, be a waitress at Hooters. Or C, be Playboy Playmate of the Month.
It waitress at Hooters.
You're right. That's what it was. Hooters have been sued a number of times by men who claim it is sexist that the company will not hire them to put on skimpy shorts and very tight T-shirts tied under the bosom and serve...
Oh, please, that's enough. That's enough.
Oh. Well, you're offended. You're allowed to do it. We are not.
I don't know if you noticed, Peter, but the big hammer just came down.
It sure did. All right, that's good. That was very good. That was very good. Here is your second question. Brad Pitt, movie star, recently struck a blow
for male equality when he became the first man ever to star in a Chanel No. 5 TV ad. Usually it's a female movie star. In the ad, he says, which of these immortal lines, I'm going to quote Brad Pitt, is it A, I am like a cave-dwelling fish. I have no eyes, merely a nose, open to experiencing you. Or, is it B, the world turns and we turn with it. Plans disappear, dreams take over, but wherever I go, there you are. Or is it C, if you wear Chanel No. 5, a handsome movie star like me might find you attractive. Otherwise, no dice.
Well, I'm sure it's not number 3.
Okay.
I certainly hope it's not number 1, so I'd have to go with number 2.
You are correct. That is
nice.
The particular quote from Mr. Pitt. I have no idea what he means, but apparently it's something to do with perfume. All right, last question. Just recently, 24-year-old Rob Wilson broke the glass ceiling, or floor as the case may be, when he became the first man ever to do what? A, watch the Oprah Network. B, be a demonstration model on The Price is Right. Or C, date Donald Trump.
Gosh. I think it's number 2.
You are correct, in fact.
Wow.
Auditioned, won an online poll, and he became the first male model to appear, demonstrating all the nice prizes on The Price is Right. Carl, how did Minority Leader Pelosi do?
Nancy, you had 3 correct answers, so you win for Tom and Libby Dyksel. Congratulations.
Well done. Another victory. And I hope this triumph ranks right up there with the Affordable Care Act. In terms of your personal resume.
Well, I'm happy. Tom and Libby, I hope to meet you sometime. I hope that those were the answers that you would have chosen as well.
I do too, because they would have lost otherwise.
Ms. Nancy Pelosi is the former Speaker of the House, currently the Minority Leader in the U.S. House of Representatives. Ms. Pelosi, thank you so much for being with us. What a pleasure to speak to you, and good luck.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Carl, Charlie, Faith, and Luke, and all of you. It was great fun to be with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. In just a minute, Carl yells at you to turn off your TV. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Chevrolet, maker of the Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Details at ChevyVolt.com. Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy. And eSurance, insurance for the modern world, offering car insurance tools to guide customers from quote to claim. Online or via mobile at eSurance.com. We will be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Luke Burbank, Charlie Pierce, and Faith Saley. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl is charged with rhyme doping and steps down as the head of the Limstrong Foundation. If you'd like to join, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Charlie, you've heard the expression, 40 is the new 30. Well, scientists at the Max Planck Institute in Rostock, Germany, have updated that. They're saying that what is the new 30?
50.
Higher?
70.
Yes, 70 is the new 30. Somebody in the audience is like, yes, yes.
Wait a minute, does that mean in 12 years I can start smoking dope again?
Exactly.
Yeah!
No, the Planck Institute says 70 is the new 30, while the Institute of Everybody Else says, no, it's not. here's what they're saying. They're saying that thousands of years ago, humans tended to die on average around age 30, but since the Industrial Revolution and all kinds of other modern...
And since we stopped getting eaten by saber-toothed tigers.
Pretty much. Anyway, our lifespan has been increasing by about 3 months on average every year since the Industrial Revolution. So the current human lifespan averages between 75 and 80. In other words, 70 is the new 30, not because you're youthful and spry and 70, but because 30 used to mean you were near death. Therefore, if you are a 45-year-old man working as a barista and still living at home with your parents, you are not a child prodigy. Faith, in a bold move sure to win him support among a certain demographic, French President François Hollande,
oui.
Announced he was banning what?
M-work.
Homework, yes, yeah. Homework.
Homework?
M-work, yes. Yeah,
that's right, Frenchie. Put down that pencil and turn on the TV, because from now on, homework est fin. It's part of Hollande's sweeping reform package that also includes measures to let everybody watch just one more episode before bed, and it reclassifies Funyuns as a vegetable. The idea is that since some kids have help at home and some don't, homework is an unfair way to distribute schoolwork. When asked about these new laws, President Hollande explained that he's thinking of what's best for the future, namely his own future, in his goal of being named most awesome president for life once he lowers the voting age to 5. Yeah.
If he's reelected by mostly votes that are written in crayon, that's a dead giveaway.
Yeah, I know. The problem is, if homework is outlawed, only outlaws will do homework. The dorky kid will be hanging outside the school saying, psst, hey, man, you want to try a worksheet? Faith, a company in Japan has come up with the latest must-have iPhone accessory. It's a small attachment that allows you to send people what?
It's not wasabi.
No.
An iPhone attachment that allows you to send people something that you can already send people everything with your iPhone.
Not yet. Not without this.
I need a hint, please.
Oh, wow. Is that me or you? Or is somebody smexting you?
Smell?
Yes, a smell. It can send people smells. Ever since...
So amazing and Japanese.
It very much. Ever since the development of the cell phone, this is the technology that no one has been dreaming of. The gadget, it is called Chat Perf. Perf. Allows you to send smells to your friends, or more likely enemies. Why sex when you can send the scent of a dozen roses? Why talk to the 911 dispatcher when you can send the smell of smoke filling your apartment?
This makes drunk dialing from a bar an even worse idea.
I know. And somebody also, it would enable what must be the worst butt dial ever.
Somebody was definitely using like the beta version of this on the plane out here today.
Really?
Yeah, there was something going on. And I wanted to stand up and say, we can smell that. We're in a tin can together. And, like, this is not...
And that's why you're supposed to turn your phones off when you fly.
Charlie, neuroscientists in the UK have been able to determine the worst what in the world?
Sound.
Yes, the worst sound. Very good, Charlie. And what is the world's worst sound?
It's my voice.
No. It's not that. Well, according to these scientists, who we presume have not been to a Fish concert, nothing...
Oh, the drive-by!
Nothing triggers... When we get tired of making fun of Nickelback. Let's move on. Nothing triggers our auditory pain sensors like the sound of a knife on a glass bottle.
Ooh.
Which raises the important question, who the hell opens their glass bottles with a knife? And that's not all. Number two on their list, the sound of a fork scraping a glass bottle. Apparently, they did all their research during a picnic for morons. Turns out they discovered that pleasant sounds activate one part of your brain, unpleasant sounds activate another. They tried all these different sounds, and they figured out which had the highest activation of the bad sound section. Scientists think this was an evolutionary adaptation because in prehistoric times, there was no greater threat to our ancestors than people cutting glass bottles with knives. Cavemen were like, damn it, Og, I told you, it has a twist cap.
Do you think they tried sporks?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming shows in Milwaukee, Los Angeles, and Dallas, Texas. Also, check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to steal the Mona Lisa. Don't, though. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Joe from Davenport, Florida.
Hey, Joe, how are things in Davenport?
Not bad at all. A little warm today, but good.
Well, that's the blessings of living in Florida. Where is Davenport? I don't know it.
It's about 10 miles west of a very large theme park.
Oh, I understand. Do the people around that particularly large theme park go to that particularly large theme park all the time?
Not all the time, but often.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You never get bored? You're never like, I've been on that ride?
I was there a couple days ago. Had a good time.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Sounds a little defensive.
Well, welcome to our show, Joe. Carl Castle right now is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a big winner. Ready to play?
All right, ready to go.
Here is your first limerick.
Personalities we are ignoring, because we're all too busy adoring. Sure, they are hot, but interesting, not. Most beautiful people are...
boring?
Yes, they are. Actually, hold on. This is radio. Yes, we are. According to a study by scientists in Israel, who are probably really homely, attractive people favor conformity and self-promotion over creativity and individualism.
That completely works in my theory that I have developed at the Luke Burbank Institute. Which is something I call personality sonar. I mean, this is really my theory, is that we develop our personalities by saying things, and then the way they bounce back to us is, that was funny, or that was interesting, or whatever. And if you go through life looking like Angelina Jolie, you're like a bat that can't echolocate, right? I mean, there's just no way you're going to have a realistic read on what you say is interesting or not interesting. Because at a bar, if a hot chick says, look at that wall. Guys are falling all over themselves to, tell me more, right? It's holding up part of the ceiling. Keep going. It's like, no wonder you don't have a good personality. Nobody's creating the situation in which you have to develop a good personality. I'm essentially standing up for the beautiful people here, guys.
Hey, we appreciate it.
That's what they...
Very good. Here is your next limerick.
Literal cats do not swing. We mice, though, we make rafters ring. We belt and we croon a most wonderful tune. We mice really know how to...
sing?
Yes, sing! Researchers at Tulane University have discovered that not only do mice sing to attract mates, as we've reported before on this show, they sing in groups, like tiny little boy bands. This little mouse is the bad boy, this one's the heartthrob, this is the shy one. And just like with the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC, when one gets eaten by a cat, you can replace him and no one notices. Very good. Here is your last limerick.
Think of this as you pay cable bills. There's a cost to those secondhand thrills. Reality wives suck marrow from lives. Watching TV truly...
kill?
Yes! If you feel like killing yourself if you have to watch one more presidential debate, don't bother, because new research from Australia shows that sitting around in a sedentary way is so deadly. For every hour watched of TV, you lose on average 22 minutes of your lifespan. Just think about that, 22 minutes for every hour. If you watched every episode of Friends, that's 118 hours of television. That would mean both your life isn't worth living and you won't get to live it. Carl, how did Joe do it?
Well, Joe had three correct answers, Peter, so Joe, you win our prize.
Excellent.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done, Joe, and thanks for playing.
My pleasure.
Now it's time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Charlie Pierce has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Faith Saley and Luke Burbank, they're tied for second. They both have 2 points.
All right. Well, we have flipped a coin, and Luke has elected to go first. So, the clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. In a sting operation on Wednesday, the FBI arrested a man accused of plotting to blow up the blank in New York.
Federal Reserve.
Right. The CDC announced this week that over 200 people in 14 states have been diagnosed with blank linked to a tainted medication.
Meningitis.
Yes. The UN special envoy traveled to blank to try to negotiate a ceasefire over the Muslim holiday.
Syria.
Yes. Joe Biden was among the hundreds of mourners who attended the funeral for Pennsylvania Senator Blank, who died last Sunday at age 82.
Arlen Specter.
Right. Even though the transcript says differently, Brown University insists the Dalai Lama said blank during a recent speech and not a four-letter word.
Binders of women?
No. They say that what the Dalai Lama really said was forget, not what the transcript initially reported him as saying.
Be he the said, swearing you want to be.
Exactly.
Because
organizers of the 2013 Super Bowl announced this week that blank would be performing at the halftime show.
Beyonce.
Right. Britain's Advertising Standards Authority has banned TV commercials for Arm & Hammer Advanced Whitening Toothpaste after it was shown the toothpaste blanks.
Makes your teeth look better?
No. They banned the ads after it was shown the toothpaste makes your teeth look darker. Clinical trials show that some people had whiter teeth, sure, but for almost half the users, their teeth stayed the same or got darker. Users have only themselves to blame. The label clearly states that the active ingredients in the toothpaste are black tar and coal. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Luke has taken the lead.
Well done, Luke. All right. Faith, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Police in the Netherlands are investigating the theft of 7 blanks from the Kunsthal Museum in Rotterdam.
Pieces of art.
Right. In response to rumors about his health, Cuba's government-run newspaper ran a letter signed by blank.
Fidel Castro.
Yes. The Supreme Court in Ohio ruled this week that early blanking would be allowed to continue the weekend before the election.
Voting.
Right. Akron City Hall was evacuated after authorities found a metal rod with the word kaboom on it. It turned out it was just blank.
It turned out it was just a joke.
No, it turned out it was a walking stick belonging to a man with the last name Kaboom. On Thursday, the publishers of the magazine Blank announced that they are discontinuing the print edition at the end of the year.
This week.
Yes, the Nobel Prize Committee continued to draw criticism this week for their decision to award the Peace Prize to Blank.
The European Union.
Right. The people at Sesame Street have issued a court order to stop a company from selling blank.
Sunny Days.
No. To stop a company from selling sexy Big Bird costumes, as well as sexy Oscar, sexy Bert, sexy Ernie, sexy Elmo, and sexy Cookie Monster costumes. They're basically lingerie that look like the Muppets if you squint your eyes just the right way and drink a fifth of tequila first. Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz?
Faith had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She is now tied with Luke for the lead.
All right, then. How many, then, does Charlie need to win?
5 correct answers.
All right, here we go. Charlie, this is for the game. This week, both Secretary of State Clinton and President Obama took responsibility for the security problems in blank.
Benghazi, Libya.
Right. Pretrial hearings began at Guantanamo Bay this week for the men accused in the attacks on blank.
9/11, the World Trade Center.
Yes, restaurants, businesses, and beverage groups filed a lawsuit this week to try to stop New York's ban on blank.
Big old sodas.
Yes. A man in Perth, Australia, is attempting to shame Print Hall Bar after he claims he was kicked out because of his blank.
The alligator he was wearing on his head.
No, he close. He says he was kicked out because of his mullet. After a slow drive, after a slow drive across Los Angeles, the blank finally reached the California Science Center.
The Space Shuttle.
Afternoon. Yes, Space Shuttle Endeavor. This week, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were announced as the co-hosts of the blank ceremony in January.
The Oscars?
No, the Golden Globes. In honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the English village of Wiltshire is blanking.
Painting itself pink.
No, close. It's turning a 1,000-foot-high conical hill into a giant boob.
Oh, Seattle. Yeah. Boob Hill. Sure.
Boob Hill. Seattle has its space needle. Wiltshire, England will have the space nipple. Using thousands of pink lights, an artist will install a giant glowing nipple atop the existing, already boob-shaped hill in Wiltshire. Even though the plan has just been announced, Wiltshire city officials have already noted a slight increase in breast cancer awareness and a huge increase in infantile jokes. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers to win outright, but Charlie had 4 correct answers, giving him 8 more points. So he has 12 points, as does Faith Seeley and Luke Burbank. All of them are tri-champions.
Whoa! Amazing! What a wonderful symbol of unity.
Yeah. Or a race to the bottom.
Exactly. It's just a few weeks before the presidential election, so in just a minute we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be this election's October surprise. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Pimsleur Language Programs, whose unlimited series allows users to study to play Bluff the Listener Challenge on a Nook or desktop using interactive software at Barnes & Noble Booksellers, and the National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer coordinator is Ray Teresi. Our intern is Leah Menzer. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Filarczyk and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liedemann composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be this election's October surprise? Faith Saley.
With a nod to Halloween, both Biden and Ryan awkwardly show up at the last presidential debate in the same pink, sexy cat costume.
Charlie Pierce.
On a campaign trip to Elyria, Ohio, Joe Biden spots a tornado, goes off, and saves hundreds of lives in 5 surrounding counties, clinching the pivotal swing state.
And Luke Burbank.
The Romney camp's plan is exposed. A plan to hire women off of Craigslist, to stand at the polls and slap voters leaning towards Obama.
And if any of those surprises happen, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Faith Stanley, Charlie Pierce, and Mr. Luke Burbank. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll be back next week. This is NPR.
Support for WPLN comes from Pope John Paul II High School, equipping students for lives of learning and faith, hosting an open house Thursday, October 25th at 6:30 p.m. jp2hs.org. Faith leads us beyond ourselves. The Metro Emergency Communications Center reminds you that 911 is for life-threatening emergencies only. If you call 911 by mistake, never hang up. All hang-up calls must be returned, which ties up 911 resources. To avoid calling by accident, lock your cell phone keypad and never store 911 on speed dial. In Davidson County, 862-8600 is the number to call for non-emergencies.
Yeah.
celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML, Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS, Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.